when we first began, it was definitely to try to put something out that had a sound of those 45s and records that he used to collect. At the time, there wasn't too much of that going on. A lot of the recordings in the funk world were they were different, they were sort of cleaner, newer sounding, shinier, I guess. And so the essence is always to sort of play music that can get people up and dance, but have an edge to it. It is out there for people to enjoy.
John Castle, the sound engineer and unofficial ninth member of the Bamboos. We'll hear more from him later. The Bamboo story actually starts with Lance Ferguson, guitarist and founder of the band. Lance was inspired to move to Australia and pick up the guitar by his father, who he'd actually never met.
I didn't have a lot of contact with my grandfather and my father when I was a kid, so I wasn't raised with my father. So I knew they were guitar players, and I knew there was this wealth of music going on, but I didn't get to spend a lot of time with him. And I think, as every son wants to be their father, I think I gravitated towards doing that because I thought, these guys are my mentors and my role models. So I picked up guitar. I came to Australia and actually hooked up with my father and kind of met him for the first time. And he showed me a lot of stuff on the guitar, and, that was a really cool time to hook up with him. And I didn't spend a lot of time with my grandfather, but I was always aware of his history of making these records. And looking back now, I think the inspiration for actually releasing records, it's always been a thing for me to put out releases, and it's been important for me to really document the stuff I've done musically. I think maybe that comes from my grandfather sort of had all these records, and I'd sort of look at them and go, that's really cool. All I wanted to do for, I guess, 3 or 4 years at that time was play guitar, so that's what I did. I played guitar all day and night. Ended up getting to a level where I was able to audition at the College of the Arts on jazz guitar and get in, which was fortunate for me, actually, because it was based totally on audition and I had dropped out of high school. It's actually quite interesting that I'm able to do horn arrangements, because I was talking to Ben Grayson, our keyboard player, the other day when we were at VCA. We did a lot of extracurricular activity that was not always conducive to completing our studies. I will admit that we copied the big band arrangement from an existing thing on the day and handed it in. It was something like Fly Me to the Moon or something, like a big band kind of jazz arrangement. But, at the same time, I studied hard and I practiced really hard at college. And I think for me, the biggest thing has been listening to music, and I listen to so much music and still do. But especially in those years, I was kind of religiously and fanatically trying to soak stuff up, and obviously some of it went in. Living in Melbourne, working as a dishwasher and doing all that. It's the classic sort of thing, and practicing guitar all night and day, and doing this dishwashing job and listening to Charlie Parker records, in the bowels of this terrible restaurant. At night, I would go out to clubs, and at the time, the Rare Groove thing was sort of filtering down from England. Rare Groove thing was like a sort of DJ-based scene, a club scene, where they were pulling out these kind of rare records. People like James Brown and Marvin Gaye and real funky stuff, and also some jazz-influenced stuff as well. And I was really fascinated with not only the music, but also this culture of DJs unearthing these old records and sourcing them. And I was hearing this music I'd never heard, and it really made an impression on me. And I think that was very helpful in the end.
You got to have a mother for me. Yeah, yeah. Louis.
So when I first thought about forming the Bamboos, I was really listening to a band called The Meters, who are a New Orleans, classic New Orleans funk band, a four-piece band, which is just drums, bass, guitar, and Hammond organ. And the Hammond organ was really the sound I was hearing, and the sound of not only of The Meters, but also a lot of records on the labels like Blue Note and Prestige Records that I was really into. It was kind of really funky music, but they were mainly instrumentals, and that sort of made sense to me because I'd been studying jazz and playing in bands like that and doing gigs like that around Melbourne. So I thought, look, let's put a band together and try and play the music of The Meters and cover their songs, but kind of learn through doing that. I wanted to kind of study their music because I'd always been listening to it, but when you actually sit down and have to learn the songs, there's a different kind of level of understanding it. So I said, let's put this band together. And we will not only do gigs and have fun and play good music, but we'll kind of be studying and researching and learning about this music at the same time. So it really started out as a live thing. Around the same time, getting back to this kind of DJ world, I always had sort of, one foot in as well. Bands were putting out independently produced and pressed and released 45 7-inch records. And, you know, that for me sounded like the coolest thing in the world, and it totally kind of married what I was trying to do with the band we'd formed. So I thought, let's actually record the Bamboos and do it on the format of a 7-inch vinyl record. It was all self-funded, recorded at John Castle Studio, who's still our sound engineer, and we still record all our albums there too.
I wasn't so interested in the style of music that he'd actually brought to the table, I guess, which may have actually been an advantage because I could look objectively at it to see it for what it was, in a way, and what he was actually trying to achieve. Well, he didn't really know how to achieve it, and so he was sort of relying on me to do that, but I guess I've come around a bit now. I started a studio about 12 years ago. I was doing a lot of jazz demos for friends and stuff around from Melbourne. We'd done a few demos together, and then he approached me saying that he wanted to put together a sort of a deep funk 45. And he just gave me some articles that he'd read and some concepts and played me some music and wanted to know whether I could sort of achieve that sound. I was a bass player by trade, so I'd always sort of played similar styles, I guess. I'd never gone in as sort of deeply niche into the sort of records and particular artists he was talking about. Recording wise, it's a rougher sound. It's not so cleanly recorded. And in the beginning, we were just running onto a four-track reel-to-reel machine. And I happen to have a whole lot of weird old 60s mics, and I'm just a bit of a mic collector and always have been. So that kind of worked well together because I had a whole lot of weird old Valve gear and vintage stuff from the 60s built in Australia. And utilising only the four tracks of the four-track recorder, you're kind of limited to what you can record, and that was the whole point. So we had the band playing live, each of the instruments would go to one track, and then we'd do a simple mix down, add some horns over the top, you know, maybe add some old sort of reverbs, some old spring reverbs, which kind of have a sort of eerie 60s kind of sound to them.
And made this record, and I've got it pressed up in Tennessee. I sent it out to like all the DJs that I knew of. We got this like crazy response from these guys, and I think looking back, you know, 10 years later now, heaps of bands do it. But at the time, it seemed like quite an audacious thing. But I thought this is really cool, and maybe we can actually push the profile of the band a little bit in this international scene. A lot of it was that it came from Australia, and they were kind of bugging out that a record like this could come from, to them, a place that's like on the, you know, well, it is, it's on the other side of the world, and maybe not expected to be a great source of soulful music, I guess. You gotta get in the scene, yeah, like a dancing machine, y'all. So if you wanna know, real deal, then get on up, pop, ha, and then get down. Bounce, rock, tick a to the ground, and if you wanna know, real deal, about the crew, well, you gotta get in the scene, like a dancing machine, y'all. Now break. because I'm a New Zealander, it's a little bit different in New Zealand to Australia. And I think the fact that there is a huge Polynesian community in New Zealand who really do embrace, you know, African American music or black music, whatever you want to call it. The difference here is we haven't kind of got a strong history or subculture of people identifying with black music. And it's not to say that only people of, you know, a certain skin colour will embrace a certain type of music, but in my experience that is a common thing that happens. And, you know, basically Australia's a fairly white-based culture, and so I think the history of our music appreciation has mirrored that. And so rock and roll is massive, country music is massive. I'm talking about, you know, the fact that in New Zealand in the, you know, in the early 70s there were heaps of Maori funk bands, for instance, who were doing gigs, and my mother was involved in that scene a little bit, and I just don't think there was that culture in Australia so much. It's just a different culture.
How did the Bamboos get a record deal? How did they break through that?
I think the way that True Thoughts and Lance worked together, they worked together very closely. From their point of view, they just step out, let us make the records, and then they do as much as they can to try to put it in the hands of other people, which it was a perfect blend, I think. I mean, it happened to be that they were an English label, so obviously they have more contacts over in Europe and England and some in America. So that ended up sort of being a good way. And Europe itself, I find, is probably a little bit more open to the sort of genres that we're dealing with.
When I think of the Bamboos, I think of this internationally renowned band. And I guess because of the nature of the genre in Australia, it makes sense that they had to pursue success in other parts of the world.
It's a strange thing about Australia from a music point of view, in that if you're represented overseas, often places here will take you more seriously. It's a strange thing, but I think it's our kind of looking over to overseas as a bastion of greater music. But in the end, we've got great music here, and I've always believed that, and it's important that things are still made here and still come out of here. But I think also the Bamboos here has created their own kind of excitement levels and stuff here. They've sort of led a bit of a path for other bands too, I guess.
So in terms of describing what I feel the genre, the Bamboos, is, I would have to say now, I wouldn't even say a funk band, I would say a soul band, because I think the term soul encompasses funk and it encompasses a broad range of music. And it also, for me, embraces a feeling of music, because music can be really soulful without literally being in the genre of soul music, and that's something I look for in all music I listen to. And a folk song can be really soulful, obviously. Any kind of genre can be soulful, so that allows us to push the boundaries a little bit.
When we get to the studio, we don't actually have a whole lot of time. Usually the whole record's recorded in 5 days. A lot of the time the guys haven't even heard the track, so we'll listen through the tracks, we'll talk about what sort of sounds we want. Basically starts with the rhythm section in on, say, the Monday. To get the whole rhythm section, maybe 12 tracks done in a day, which is quite a heavy workload. And then the second day, we probably get the horns in. You know, it might take about 6 hours for the whole record. And the third day, Lance and I would sit there and he'd do some guitar, and then I'll put a whole lot of percussion down. And by the fourth day, we've kind of got most of the stuff we want in there. So by Friday, we'll do vocals. So it's actually a very quick process, which is kind of scary, but somehow we've ended up getting it done.
That's insane.
It's crazy. We work with a small budget, but that was also coming back to the essence of the Bamboos, which was always, let's not muck around with this and turn this into some, you know, Def Leppard 6 month project. Let's really get this down quickly, because I think that's actually enjoyable as well. And if you labour on things too much, they can actually get worse. In the last couple of records, we've had a little bit more time. It might be 2 weeks now we've got to do the whole thing.
You know, I'm able to also surround myself with amazing musicians who are able to often translate my insane rantings into things that make sense as well. So oftentimes I'll be singing a horn line in the studio, and Ross Irwin, who's our trumpet player and an amazing arranger and orchestrator of strings and horns and things like that, I'll even play him an old album, you know, like a Curtis Mayfield thing with a particular horn sound or something, and I'll sing him my melodic line a bit, go, I want it, you know, like this, and he'll be able to translate that into a six-piece chart on the spot where everyone's playing the right harmony. So, you know, I'm working with people who really function on a high level as well with doing that sort of thing. The lineup of the Bamboos has changed a lot over, you know, the decade. It started out as a four-piece band, but I think the lineup we have now, which is an eight-piece lineup, I don't really think it's going to change too much from here on in. You know, I've spent a long time struggling to find a regular vocalist for the band, and when we found Kylie Aldist, that was just, things fell into place. Wait a minute.
Lance was really interested in expanding the Bamboos to basically be a vocal funk soul band. And we were racking our brains trying to think of someone in Melbourne, and we thought about maybe getting some overseas people in. And then, I don't know what happened, but we were both sitting outside the studio and we both thought about Kylie, and it just made perfect sense. I don't know why we hadn't thought of it before.
We had a gig at Meredith Music Festival and got this great set which started at 4 a.m. So, like, you know, the air is pretty electric at that point, and people are well up for, you know, for everything. And at that point, the Bamboos had been an instrumental act. I think there were only like four songs for her to sing in the set, but she came out and did these songs. And we, you know, like I said, we'd been through a few singers before that, and it just wasn't right, and it never felt right to me. And Kylie came out, and she's such a natural and exuberant sort of personality, and it really was a feeling of that went through all of us. It wasn't just me, it was everyone was like, this is what it's meant to be.
I got a call from Lance, and he said,
well, hi Kylie, I haven't spoken to you for a long time, and I've asked, well, probably four other people,
but I like to say at least 27
other people to do the gig at Meredith, and they can't do it, so we thought of maybe you.
And I'm like, oh, okay. It's nothing like being, you know, wanted.
So yeah, it was this one gig where she, you know, arrived and in the Bamboos, and from then on it was like you're in.
She turned up and just smashed the gig in a great way. When everyone heard that, and when you saw the audience reaction from that, it was quite something.
Do you reckon you can? I'm like, oh, you reckon? Watch this. You know, I have two kids, I'm a wife and mother, and I spend most of my days cooking and cleaning and doing basically what my kids tell me to. And then I get into a van and travel the world with eight or nine boys at different times. So my young son Jimmy has decided that he calls the Bamboos the Bumpoos, and he thinks he's quite hilarious.
She's a great, caring person and very funny.
How do you go on tour with eight or nine other guys? Do you take on this sort of naturally mother sort of role?
Not really. I have told them that under no circumstances are they to think that I will do anything for them at any time. And I also make sure that I have a book at all times, because some of them think I'm clever because I read books, but I said I'm only reading my book to get away from you. No, I love them. They're good boys. But as I said, they do. I can't read music. They're all jazz musicians and they like to talk about jazz a lot, and I really don't. So I have music to listen to, I have books to read, and I have earplugs for when I can't get any of those other things happening. Stolen, stolen, all the time, oh, do you lie? I
you've got to give her a bit of a jog in the studio and make sure she gets the parts done. we're a little bit hard on her, but I think in the end we get the best things out of her.
Johnny and Lance can push me. They push me ridiculously, especially when I'm in the studio with them. And, you know, like I'll be singing away in this trying to record something and I'll say, Johnny, I can still hear you guys. You've left the microphone on. They'll be chewing chips and swearing and carrying on. And they're like, yeah, we're just waiting till you sing in tune and then we're going to start recording. They're very rude. Basically, it always seems to happen in summer when it's boiling hot and we're down in Johnny's shed and it's like, radio, hurry up, Kylie. Now they make me repeat it until I get angry and then they go, oh, now it sounds good. And they make me have beers and just actually feel, and then they keep on playing back to me stuff that I've done to a live audience so that I can get the vibe, because I find it really difficult to record. I sing much better on stage. So yeah, the recording process for me is a difficult one, and I think they do like to take to me with sticks. The Bamboo sound is very, it's huge and they're so tight. It is a real pleasure, and you know, like, as much as I tease them, it is an honour to play with them. because they're all they're fantastic musicians, but it's on the money, and yeah, and we all have to be up to it. It's been my main job, you know, and for me to go overseas, you know, leave my children behind, I mean, I have to be into it to do that. We're all friends together, we've all lived together basically. They're like my family. And with that goes the same thing that we all have little, you know, spats and little fights, but basically we've seen a lot of each other and we really enjoy playing together.
We've been best mates for a long time now, and really through the Bamboos. I mean, doing music as I do full time, you make a lot of friends, a lot of acquaintances, a lot of good friends. You know, some sort of last the test of time. But I guess we've just become really good friends, and I think that in the beginning it was, when we didn't know each other very well, it was simply a matter of me trying to interpret his vision for sound. And now that we've sort of spent a lot more time together, we're always talking about stuff. We're always, you know, every time we're having a beer in the backyard or having a barbecue, we're still talking about, which sounds really boring, but we do talk about other things as well. But we're always trying to develop ideas or develop new sounds or concepts, and they're just such a great bunch of guys, and it's just great fun hanging out with them. I've learned a lot from them. They're all great players, and I just think about a lot of fun in weird hotel rooms around the country.
Suits, fun, drinks. I really enjoyed it. It's given me like the opportunity to really sing out and really go for it and sing songs that I'm allowed to have an input to. So yeah, for me, the Bamboos it's great fun.
The first thing that I think of when I think of the Bamboos over the last 10 years is us as a group of really great friends and a slightly dysfunctional family touring around the world, playing our music to people and having a lot of fun. Recently, I started writing the next Bamboos record. And I said, what is the Bamboos? What do people think of when they think of the Bamboos? What do they want in an album? What should I do here? And I really was just thinking, it should be fun. Basically, we're here to have a good time with people. And, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
That's kind of how it started, I guess. And it's changed a lot since the early days, but the concept is still kind of the same.